Welcome back. As we head into hour three, we do so delightfully as we do every Thursday with Sam Stone. He has his own radio show here, heard every Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m.
3 p.m. indeed, Breaking Battlegrounds. You can hear it here on The Patriot. And you know, if you're so inclined, you can download also our podcast. Make sure you get every single episode. It is the top-rated show at its time slot, so you're getting good content. And surprise, potentially, but I think we may have the previous Secretary of Defense on next week.
Oh, fantastic.
So,
oh, great.
I mean, we're getting some really cool guests for that show.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It is a great show. And if you want to download, you can go to 960thepatriot.com to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sam is also a candidate for city council here in District 6. SamStone.vote is the website. We're going to cover a little bit of local, and we're going to emanate outward and get to some national and some international news with Sam.
Because there's nothing going on today,
yeah, Sam. Right?
I mean, absolutely no news to be had.
There is a ton, and we're going to do it with Sam, whose mind is wide, broad, and deep. Sam, first on the local stuff, how's your race going? How's the city council race going?
It's great. I actually have a bit of news that I think will probably shock you and your listeners, Seth. But the first person I've gotten to endorse me after the primary, if you want to call it jungle primary mess that we had in November, is actually the person who finished in a dead heat for third place in that race and a Democrat.
Oh, wow. Great.
Joan Green, who finished about a 1% behind me in that race.
That was your toughest battle right there.
Yeah, her and Moses Sanchez each finished about 500 votes behind me. They're basically tied. And so she has agreed to come on board and support my campaign and is going to take an active role on it.
Fantastic.
And you know what? I sat down with her and had breakfast. And, you know, first thing she said was, I disagree with you on most everything. But you got some good ideas.
I like it. And you have integrity. We're going to say some nice words about another Democrat in a few minutes as well.
Yeah, and I will say, I do want to say, from my time on the campaign trail, I really, really got to like both Joan and a guy named Mark Mormons, who was on that campaign, who was also more left of center. Uh-huh. But both of them, I thought, were in it for good reasons. They were honest. You know, they were honest about their beliefs and the things they wanted to do and had some good ideas. Mark really actually has a ton of very good ideas. He works for the Arizona Corporation Authority.
Okay.
And so he's heavily involved in economic development. And he's a smart guy. So, you know, I think that you're not going to hear many Republicans bragging that their first endorsement was a Democrat, but I have no shame.
Yeah. Well, lest anyone get the wrong idea, you have endorsements from not only Democrats, but some substantial conservatives
Sal DeCiccio. I've got Carrie Lake as endorsement. I've got Sal DeCiccio's endorsement. And, you know, I mean,
you're already uniting the city.
Yeah. You know what? And these local races, as I've said on this campaign trail over and over again, it's really less about ideology than it is about functionality, right?
Yep.
I mean, people, you want the garbage picked up on time. You want your street repaired properly. You want your water to flow and be clean. You know, that's the city government.
Yeah. Well, there are a few ideological things, though. We can get into those. We need more police.
We want them
paid better. We need less homeless, and we're going to talk about all that. SamStone.vote is his website if you want to learn more about Sam. Or help him out. You know, let's work backwards into the homeless thing, the chronic homeless problem, if we might, Sam. I was, speaking of Democrats, we might say a good word about, I was talking about on the show yesterday, you know, the Katie Hobbs governorship. It's going to be a rough 4 years. It's going to
be
really
ugly. I mean, look, she's already proving what I sent out in a tweet before the end of the, but right after the election, which is every word she said on that campaign trail was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And every single word, it's not going to stop. And she's going to disprove everything she campaigned on.
Well, the other thing, too, is that she's taking every opportunity to continue to put her thumb in the eye of Republicans and conservatives. I don't understand why even before inauguration she sees this as necessary. It's not. It doesn't bode well.
It's not necessary, and it doesn't bode well. Look, I mean, the best thing, if you're in Arizona right now, be very thankful that we have a Republican-controlled legislature. The House and the Senate have, I mean, even though they're razor-thin majorities, we have them. They're going to be able to stop her. But watch out. I mean, you know, Pima County started talking yesterday or the day before about going back to mass mandates.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the powers, the breadth of powers that Governor Ducey was able to claim mm-hmm. under that mm-hmm. aegis. And I would watch out because I can guarantee you that Katie Hobbs, who will not get much done legislatively,
right.
Will be extending the power of that governor's office as far as she can via executive agency.
Yeah, I'm very worried about it. And also we can see a few other things that aren't going to bode well. As I was talking about her homelessness plan
is a joke.
Yeah, Hobbs's plan, I'm reading from AZ Central, Arizona Republic. Hobbs's plan announced again last week. I mean,
and of course, AZ Central does like a 2,000-word booty kiss yes. of an article yes. for it. Ridiculous.
Yes. To quote some of that kiss, Hobbs's plan proposes encouraging local zoning changes, providing legal aid to families facing eviction, and investing in the Housing Trust Fund, which funds affordable housing development and assistance programs, among other strategies. I will sum that up. What you see in the zone on 9th Avenue is going to stay exactly the same.
That's it.
That's what's
For what all of her plan amounts to is we're going to keep doing the same thing, and I'm going to ask for $200 million more for the Housing Trust.
Right.
Now, here's the thing, Seth. Let's do the numbers together. You, me, all the listeners out there, if you're listening right now, $200 million divided by, and this is a low figure, 300,000. What does that leave you? 600. 600 units of housing is what that $200 million at its current cost will buy you
mm-hmm.
if the government builds that housing.
Mm-hmm.
Their cost is ridiculous. It should be half of that number.
Yep.
But that's what it is. It's actually over. Phoenix is now over $350,000 per unit when it's building affordable housing. Some of the other valley cities are a little bit lower. You could average it about 300. But so what she just announced is absolutely nothing other than a grandstand with $200 million of your money.
Yep. And it's I don't know if you if you're a fan of or if you ever listen to the Adam Carolla podcast. He was replaying an interview he did with Gavin Newsom from about 10 years ago, where Gavin Newsom was bragging about his passion, which was the homeless issue. And he kept missing the boat every single time Adam Carolla was asking him about, you know, what his view of the homeless problem is. He was talking about, you know, the woman who was fired and lost her rent. That is not the problem we're talking about.
No.
That is absolutely not the problem. You go down to 9th and Jefferson. That is not the problem we are talking about.
And you and I have talked before about the need. Look, we do need some funds from the government to help people, for instance, if all someone needs is a little assistance with their deposit mm-hmm. to get off the street, if someone needs, you know, they had an accident and they need something, some help covering their rent for a month or two, well, we need those things. We need to do those things to keep people off the street.
Mm-hmm.
That's needed.
Yeah.
The rest, but this plan is, it's not a plan. It's just a continuation of a failed program.
That's right. And what you will hear from people who support this and probably from her is the word compassion. I will give credit to someone on Adam's show. It wasn't Adam who said it, but it was one of Adam's people who said, you know, you look at what the real housing, the real homeless crisis is. When you look at the real chronic homeless crisis and you use the word compassion as just throwing more money at this problem and not doing anything with these folks that might be against the will. You know, there's a lot of people who have compassion for animals and pets.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't let their dogs live this way.
No.
This is not compassion.
No. No, it's the furthest thing from compassion. I mean, the compassionate approach is tough love. And you and I have talked about this here on the air before, and we've been part of groups that are working to try to address this problem. And I am very excited. Catherine Miranda,
let's get into that.
Democrat, mm-hmm. State senator, came out with a plan that largely mirrors the plan Carrie Lake and I put together. It largely mirrors what you and I have talked about. I mean, so you hear you have two Democrats in this state, and unfortunately, the one who has serious ideas is not the governor.
Right.
But hopefully Catherine Miranda can get Hobbs under her wing a little bit and push her in this direction. I don't know, but I do know there's a lot of interest in the legislature on the Republican side on coming on board.
Well,
so.
You and I and our group that has been working on the homeless, the chronic homeless issue, you and I can go and meet with Catherine and we will maybe hopefully get a bill that she can write that the Republican, the entire Republican caucus can get behind, but it can be a Democrat written bill. Let's get that to Katie Hobbs and see her.
I just want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And Catherine's plan is the right thing. Yeah, so I will tell you folks right now, and I'll put this out there on the air. When that bill comes up, I will go down to the legislature and I will go sit with every Republican member of the House and Senate and make sure that they understand the importance of voting for it.
I'll walk right in there with you, Sam. Yeah. People can access it, by the way, at azcentral.com. It was based on an op-ed she wrote about a Saturday ago, I think, a Saturday or two ago, Catherine Miranda. He is Sam Stone. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Boy, did you see what Boston is trying to do for the homeless? We'll tell you about that when we come back. You know Boston. I'm Seth. He's Sam. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone, candidate for city council in District 6, is my guest. He is many things. That is one of the things he is working on right now. I had mentioned Boston going out in the break because they were in the news today. Before I get into it, do you want to say something about your hometown?
Well, I think you're getting into real dangerous territory here for our local population, Seth. Yeah. I got to tell you, because you bring up Boston.
Yeah.
And let's see, something might have happened last night involving a Boston sports team and the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, yeah, something might have.
Yeah, the Celtics wrecked the Suns last night. I mean, they wrecked them. And, folks, I'm sorry. I'm a little gleeful. It's the only time I root against the Suns because I'm from Boston. I'm not giving it up. It's a religion.
I know the religion. I grew up here in Phoenix. I remember, but that, you know, it was more fun, Phoenix and against the Celtics back in those days with Larry Bird. And
the Suns have a really good team. But actually, as I tweeted last night, so watching that game, one thing that was really interesting is Peyton Pritchard, who is the Celtics' fourth guard in their rotation, actually fifth now. Fifth guard in their rotation and didn't even get in the game through three quarters last night for the Celts, right? That guy would be the best player on the Suns bench right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and they really got hijacked this offseason chasing Kevin Durant.
Okay, this will not be the end of our sports discussion this hour or basketball. Stay tuned on that. We will talk about basketball and sports more in a few moments. But let me stay on Boston for a second because their commissioner of public health and mayor has an idea for dealing with the drug-addled homeless. It was written up in the Boston Herald. They want to give them crack pipes. They want to give them crack pipes to get them off injecting, get them off syringes. This is their idea. We are now going to give them crack pipes, to which I think we are living in a mad and an insane world when that is the idea. People end up with syringe use, IV use, because they started with inhaling.
They started with inhaling, and to be honest, I mean, look, anyone who knows a drug addict, they're going to use the drugs in a way that gives them the most kick, the most high for their buck.
Yeah, by the time by the time they're injecting, they don't have much interest in inhaling.
No,
that's a really good point.
No, their health consideration at that point is not there. I mean, this is just silly. But this is part of the program that Democrats and the industry on the left have put together, which they call harm reduction, which is a really misleading term because they're not reducing harm. Reducing harm is getting people help.
That's right.
That's how you reduce harm. But what they mean is we're just going to make it easier and easier and easier to live a drug-addled lifestyle on the streets.
Yeah.
That's their version.
With a gloss and a tip of the hat to some kind of help that won't truly exist. Think of it this way. If you want to reduce the harm of cigarette smoking, do what we did with cigarette smoking. Put up warnings all over the place, tell people they are not free and welcome to smoke within hundreds of feet of anyone else, and shame them a little bit.
Well, so I'm glad
And you reduce it. You don't put filters on the ends of those cigarettes and say, we'll give you harm reduction.
I'm actually glad you brought up the smoking thing because right now you have two parallels, right?
That's right.
So there's plenty of evidence that vaping is far less harmful than smoking cigarettes. There's significant evidence about that. But the government is currently engaged in a war on vape, on vape products, theoretically because they target children.
That's
although
right.
that was kind of a fad that came and went a few years ago. As always, the government's kind of behind the times on stuff. But they're, talking about ending Juul as a company and, I mean, doing all this stuff and banning it and this and that and the other. And then they're taking on the drug side and they're saying, hey, This is what we want you to do.
Yeah.
Is this slightly less damaging version of it.
We'll hand you syringes.
Yeah.
We'll hand you crack pipes.
Wait, wait.
And we will hand you also tourniquets in case you don't listen to us. They're handing out tourniquets as well, just in case you don't get the message to go back to the crack pipe.
And Narcan and everything else. I mean, or I guess if you fall on the crack pipe, you might really need that tourniquet.
You know, that Narcan thing is interesting. Part of that story was should Narcan be available in schools, to which the answer is yes, but please put it in the nurse's office. Let's not give the message to children, if you do A, we will solve B. Let's not give the message to children or anyone that if you want to walk into a viper pit, we're going to give you some anti-venin to go with it.
Yeah.
How about let's kill the snakes or don't go into that
Narcan
pit.
Narcan is keeping a lot of people alive right now who would be dead otherwise.
That's right.
And that, you know, look, I'm never going to argue that that's a bad thing, right?
No.
We need that. We need to but you
but we have sent
not.
The message that if you continue to use, we will continue to give Narcan. And the problem is the Narcan becomes less and less effective as you routinely and continually use. Sam Quinones was saying in an interview this morning that, you know, this continual use and continual revivement by Narcan is having an effect on people's brains, because every time they go through this, they are losing oxygen to the brain. It is a dangerous cycle.
It's a terrible cycle.
Yeah.
And you see the cycle degrade people on the street, and that's where you have a lot of drug-induced psychosis that comes in. And, you know, look, at the end of the day, I understand the people in this industry view themselves through a lens of compassion, like, you know, you were talking about. But they've been captured by their own system.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I understand no one wants to point at themselves and go, man, I screwed this up and this has failed and it's not working. But at some point, real human decency requires that to happen.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. The message of how about stop and don't start is a little bit better and has proven to work every time it's tried, by the way. Ask Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Ask the smoking industry. Ask Smokey the Bear. I mean, it works every time
it's tried. You don't make it easier and reduce drug use.
Exactly right. Nicely put. All right. I don't want to leave the basketball world just yet because it has some international relations aspects to it with the release of Brittany Griner. I imagine you have a thought or two on that.
Well, I have a bunch of thoughts on that. First off, look, I mean, nobody would argue that 9 months or whatever, you know, in a Russian penal colony is an appropriate charge for marijuana. But she broke the law and she admitted it. You have a former U.S. Special Forces operator, Whelan, I forget the first name, who's been held by the Russians, who, you know, has never admitted to a crime and was not freed. And then to trade for Victor Boot, look, I think she should have been traded out of there. I think we should have found a way, frankly, a long time ago to get Brittany Griner out of there, because she has been a political prisoner of the Ukraine war.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the next question I got to ask, Seth. Victor Boot.
Yeah.
Spent years running around the world dealing arms all over the globe. Very famous from the Nick Cage movie. I just blanked on it. Was it Merchant of Death or
That's
something
right.
like that?
Yeah. That's his nickname.
Was he in U.S. jail for committing a crime, or was he in there for the crime of competing with the U.S. Military-industrial complex for sales?
Thank you. Lord of War, I think, was
Lord of
movie.
War. That was the movie, yeah. No, look, this guy was running around, and we were supporting him, and he was helping U.S. military and clandestine agencies arm people all over the globe, and then he apparently crossed us. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing that is – it's like, you know – maybe the U.S. government just shouldn't be running around the planet inserting itself in everyone else's violent conflict.
Yeah.
Or you end up dealing with a lot of guys like Victor Boot.
Yeah, that's right. Do you think Brittany Griner will now stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance in the National Anthem?
No, and it's pathetic. Yeah. I mean, what she's just learned, or she should have learned, is that the U.S. still is the greatest country on earth. And, you know, all these other governments that people like to point to don't hold a candle to us. But I highly doubt she's going to get that message. If I had to bet, Seth, she's going to come back ticked that it took so long.
Well, you know, I may have an alternate point of view on that. Let me raise it with you on the other side of this break. I'm Seth Leveson, and he is Sam Stone. That alliteration will kill you every time. I'm Seth Leveson. He's Sam. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leveson Show. He is Sam Stone. He is candidate for city council, samstone.vote. is his website if you want to help him out, and I would encourage you to do so, please. Sam, it's interesting whether Brittany Grenier will come back with a renewed patriotic fervor or not. It wouldn't be a very big step if she wanted any sense of fervor, because she was trying to lead the WNBA and certainly the Phoenix team in not standing for the national anthem and refusing to, as a matter of protest against the United States. And maybe, as you say, maybe she will now come back with a possibly different view of the United States, realizing that there are worse places and that we still are the last stand on earth, or the last best hope, depending on whether you want to quote Reagan or Lincoln. But, you know, I have a different reason that I think she will stand for the national anthem. And it's not that she had to spend some time in a Russian prison. I think it's because it's a different president. I think it's because I think you're going to see a lot of this. I think with a Democratic president, these people do tie patriotism to their politics.
They
patriotism
do.
Used to be apolitical. I remember the time when Democrats used to say, we don't like it when you guys question our patriotism, until they went on this tear that every Republican is a fascist and white supremacist or a Nazi sympathizer, to quote Katie Hobbs, for example.
I think that's a great point, Seth. I mean, absolutely, I think that's a great point, because they do view this country through the lens of who the president
that's
is
right.
specifically.
That's right.
I mean, one of the things I think that drove the hatred of Donald Trump on the left was something that my brother and a lot of left-leaning folks told me over the years prior to Trump's election, which is, oh, you guys might win the Senate, you might win the House, you know, but that doesn't matter. You'll never win the presidency again. They were absolutely certain of that point. I mean, without any question at all in their mind, there would never be another Republican president in the United States. That was their viewpoint.
Yeah.
And then Trump comes along, and not only is he a Republican, and not only does he win the White House, but he's Donald Trump, yeah. and he picks all the scabs off of all their wounds every
right.
day.
That's right.
And just drove them absolutely bat crazy.
I have to say, though, too, in discussing Democrats and patriotism, they have a really weird view of it. If I hear one more time, and I think we're going to hear it again, if you look at the direction Los Angeles is going in, or the direction New York is going in, or what you speculated the direction Katie Hobbs might go in, if I hear one more time our current president saying that your patriotic duty is to wear a mask, or your patriotic duty,
oh, yeah.
this is their idea of patriotism. They have so corrupted the notion of what it means to be, you know, someone who loves their own country, that they have rendered it meaningless in a sense.
Well, I think if you look back at
least ridiculous.
Where all this comes from, always on the left, is sort of the darkest corners of academia.
It
emerges from the dank recesses of academia, and then it makes its way into the public consciousness via the Democratic Party and their candidates. And I think you can look at it. I think they made a conscious decision within that realm that patriotism, normal, everyone agrees on it, country over party patriotism, was a barrier to leftism.
Mm-hmm.
Because leftism's reach is very limited when you're running into a country full of people who actually believe in their country and in each other.
That's right.
Leftism is today, modern leftism, is the ideology of individual narcissism.
Oh.
Right? And that's a hard thing to sell if people believe in a foundation of patriotic love for their country.
Yeah, I was talking a little bit about this yesterday on Pearl Harbor Day, quoting Franklin Roosevelt's Day of Infamy speech, which actually, with the anniversary of which would have been actually today, December 8th, the day after Pearl Harbor. And you read that, and he talks about our righteous cause. That's how Democrats talked about this country once upon a time. We've gone from that to the interesting 1619 project. You know, there's a lot to that project. Nicole Hannah Jones, who started, you know, she grew up in a family, in a household where her dad and granddad were Army veterans, and her dad flew an American flag outside their house every day and took care of it and went by the rules. And then she tells in an essay of hers, she says, until one day I came home and told him what I learned in school, which is that this country is not his country and that he should take the flag down. And I think the whole world of leftism is explained in that story. This man, black man who served in the Army and had patriotic fervor and thought, flew the flag, had to be instructed. You know, by the way, more racist America than today, had to be instructed by his daughter, who was instructed in school. that he was doing the wrong thing and had no business flying that flag. This is it's the academy, but it's also sadly elementary and secondary.
And it requires replacing reality with ideology.
Absolutely right. Sam Stone is our guest. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is our guest. SamStone.vote is his website. He's running for city council, but there's nothing he isn't willing to talk about with candor, intelligence, and goodwill. Okay, so let's talk, too, about another election, Sam. I have been toying with this idea. Well, let me connect it, actually. Let me connect it to what you were just saying about the university and the idea of the left. We convinced ourselves for many years that this socialist ideology and philosophies in the universities weren't going to have real-world effects. You know, kids would graduate, they'd become 23, 24, 25, start paying taxes and moderate their views a little bit. And we were wrong. I believe we were very, very wrong. I believe the ivory tower had a lab leak that was much more infectious and dangerous than the Wuhan lab leak or whatever came out of Wuhan.
Because it's a great analogy.
It's attacked our brains.
It's a great
analogy,
and it happened in a couple of levels.
Yeah.
So first what happened was most of the kids who went to college, whether in my era in the late 80s, early 90s, or up until about 2000, really up until Obama's reelect run, all those things that we're seeing today, CRT, right, the 1619 Project, the hatred of America, the socialist Marxist bent, all of this stuff was there.
That's right.
But most college kids did not actually get exposed to it. They might end up with one course, you know, in their required curriculum where they had a nutball professor. I had a couple of them. You know, we all had that. But it wasn't fed to us every day.
Right.
They got,
and it didn't suffuse the entirety of the faculty.
And that's where, so they very deliberately, I don't know how well this was done deliberately or how, you know, if it was sort of organic and they just figured it out. But what they realized was a couple of things. One, they really infiltrated HR, mm-hmm, and the kids who were going to HR. So then that infiltrated all the academies, all the government institutions, all the corporate institutions. That became a really barrier position because that's a very dangerous position in most companies, yep, and in most institutions. So that was one. But two, they then started filtering this into the curriculum of all the things that didn't relate to
it. That's right. That's right.
And they embedded it in the textbooks. They embedded it in the learning. They built these lessons into things that have absolutely nothing to do with our history or race. I mean, you don't.
They are presently ruining the medical field with this.
Yeah, they're ruining the medical field. Frankly, I think they've ruined it. Mm-hmm. You know,
The gerund might not be appropriate.
You know, they've done this with a huge number of areas. And so, but now it's pervasive. And now the fight is everywhere.
That's right.
And Republicans didn't see it coming.
Right.
And I really blame Obama. I believe his 2012 reelect, he was looking bad. You know, Romney early on especially was looking very good. And Obama, you know, with Obamacare very unpopular at that time, I think made a very conscious decision to drive a racial wedge into America to drive black and brown turnout for his, you know, coalition of non-white people to essentially win the thing, and really took these academic theorists from the darkest corners of academia where they should never. I mean, I'd argue they shouldn't have been allowed there to fester there in the first place, but you know, they should never have seen the light of day, and
so,
they dragged them out.
Well put. And so this has been brewing for some time, which leads me to the thesis I have and frightens me, and I want to run it by you. We've probably talked a little bit about it before because it's all I think about these days. When you look at what happened in Georgia, is it another sign that this country just might not be as center-right as we think it is? Or is something else going on here? I will also point out the statistic that I am still confused about, which is that 200,000 fewer voters voted for Herschel Walker last Tuesday than did a month ago.
No, I disagree. I think this country is still absolutely center right. But it's, you know, it's hard to hold that position given all the attacks that you're under in the media and the culture and all that sort of thing. But it is center right. Look beyond the Walker Warnock matchup in Georgia, and Republicans swept the state. I mean, swept the state,
yeah.
Right?
Brian Kemp.
No runoffs. Right. Kemp won by a huge margin. And the 200,000 fewer votes, I think, is attributable primarily to Herschel Walker. And I know I already got in trouble with one of your listeners, Seth, when I said Arizona was not a Trump state, meaning that it's not Alabama or Oklahoma where 60% of plus people are voting for Trump.
I agree with you, though. I don't think it is
it's
a
not,
Trump state.
It's yeah. not. And it's not in that sense, yeah. Right? You have plenty of people who like Trump here, but it's yeah. not a dead red Trump type state. Right. It's much more nuanced. Mm-hmm. Georgia is more nuanced also. It's not, you know, again, that's not what I would call a dead red Trump state. And look, Walker, who was the Trump-aligned candidate, the only one on that, you know, statewide ticket, is the one who had to go to a runoff and then got 200,000 fewer votes. Those 200,000 people were just checking the R box when they showed up for somebody else.
Okay. They were showing up for Brian Kemp.
Showing up for Brian Kemp. They were showing up for the other races, and then they checked the R box. But Walker wasn't enough to energize them to come out. I'm not going to in any way, shape, or form put this all on Trump, because Walker, too, had a lot of flaws. The stuff with his son coming out against him, I think, really hurt. The family stuff. I mean, you know, Seth, I'm going to get myself in trouble here.
It's okay.
But I've always had a saying.
Join the club.
I've always had a saying in politics, Seth. You can bang the Bible or you can bang your staff, mm-hmm. but you can't bang both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't his staff.
Yeah.
But Walker broke that axiom anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can go around. You can be Donald Trump. Yeah.
We were supposed to be the better party on that,
yeah.
frankly.
Well, look, you can. I don't even think it's about being the better party, but you just have to not be a hypocrite on it. So Donald Trump, I don't think anyone other than the left took offense at the Access Hollywood tape or any of that stuff. Right. It's like, oh, Donald Trump's a player?
Yeah.
He slept with half the models and Playboy
bunnies? Yeah, right.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
We've known that for 40 years.
That was so interesting when that tape came out, because I had some friends who were supporting him in D.C. who said, well, we just lost the women vote. I said, not so fast.
No.
Because I talked to a lot of suburban women after that, and they said, well, yeah, I wished he didn't, but we came to terms with him on this a long time ago, months ago.
Also, Seth, one of the most terrifying experiences of any grown man's life is sitting in a circle of women gossiping, because you're going to hear so much worse than Donald Trump has ever said in his life. And
now
you are not going
to
want to hear.
Now you want to really get in trouble.
Yeah, no. Okay. Now you got to get out of the room.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point when you need to know.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
Because this is not for male ears.
Yeah. There was a maturity to his base with that tape, which understood that some things are a little bit more important.
Yeah.
Some things are a little bit more
absolutely. You know, and again, I think people who paid attention, it was misrepresented some. So.
But I do worry still about the thesis, because
I think we have
because Georgia was a different state as Arizona was.
I think we
got
a big problem with anyone who's managed to stay in school through college.
Okay. All right. Would you answer this when we come back? We only have a short segment when we come back. I'd love it. Let's tease it. If you had a 17-year-old son or daughter, would you send them to college? Hold the thought. Hold the answer. I'm Seth. He's Sam. We'll be right back. Sam Stone is our guest. He's going to have a final thought with us in just a moment, but let me put in a good word for our friends at Y-Refi, who help make these conversations possible. If you are concerned about stock market volatility, Y-Refi has an investment opportunity for you in a portfolio with a high fixed rate of return not correlated to the stock market. It's a portfolio where you'll know what each monthly statement will look like. No surprises. Your interest is compounded daily. You're paid monthly. There are no fees and no loss of principal if you need your money back at any time. It's a secure collateralized portfolio that delivers an up to 10.25% rate of return. That's right, up to 10.25% return. A due diligence approved firm. You can check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, R-E-F-Y.com. Or give them a call at 888-YREFI-34. 888-YREFI-34. Sam Stone has been our guest this hour. We were just talking about influence of the university and college system and the influence on society. And I help as a volunteer. I just tend to help every year a bunch of students who are leaving high school to go to college. I help them with their application essays. I used to be a college admissions counselor many, many years ago, Sam. But it begs a question that I'm not going to ask them when they're at that point, but if you did have a 17-year-old son or daughter right now, would you send them to college?
Only if they were going to study STEM.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's not a good investment. Otherwise, invest your money in investyrefi.com. You're going to get a much better rate of return.
Yeah.
Look, very simply, there's no substitute for the technological, high-level technological experience, learning experience you can get there.
Especially at a serious school.
Yeah. You're not going to become an engineer at your local public library.
Right.
And you're not going to become an engineer by taking, community college courses or whatever. But no, if they were not heading down that track, I would not want them to go to college. And I would highly encourage them if they were insistent on that, I would highly encourage them to switch to a more technical field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if they're not full STEM, mm-hmm. switch to something with a dedicated career path coming out of it.
Yeah.
Because those programs tend to stay more on track. They have to,
yep.
right? But two, I would tell you, go 2 years at your local community college and transfer your credits first.
Mm-hmm.
Do not bother spending your money.
For 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. And, you know, it's also going to be true that aside from the return on the investment, it's the return on the values you were taught by your parents that are going to get changed as well.
And if I'm a parent, I'm having regular conversations yep. with my kid, and I want to make sure they're comfortable having those with me
Good.
and telling me what they're being taught.
Good.
Because, look, a lot of what they're going to be taught in any kind of sociology, you know, in any sort of the liberal arts end of it is going to be wackadoodle.
Yep. Yeah, they can go and major in English and never study Shakespeare, too. So I
right.
think it's important that the conversation.
Well, you know, that racist old white guy.
Well, but
who
that
cares
is, but
about his writing?
But you know what that means? That means it's incumbent on adults to bone up on the stuff again, too, because they're going to have to supplement their college students' education.
You do.
With education.
Yeah, you have to balance it. You have to counter it.
Sam Stone, thank you, sir. Again, folks, samstone.vote is his website, samstone.vote. He is a candidate for city council. He is a great candidate. He will be a great city councilman. Help him out. Until tomorrow, I am Seth Leibson. God bless you all. Class dismissed.